If you think you've reached the end, you're so close to the beginning. If you're at your worst right now, you should be very excited because that means it's going to turn if you keep going through with it, and things will get better and you'll build even more resilience and grit because you'll be facing this impossible seemingly task and you'll overcome it. Don't give up. Everyone's there. You're not a failure.
Welcome to Hitting the Ceiling, the show for entrepreneurs and leaders who refuse to let a ceiling become the end of their story. Chad Taylor spent 25 years trying almost every kind of self-employment. But no matter what he did, he kept running into the same problem. Too busy to answer the phone, too small to hire help, and too worn out to keep up. Then a lunch with his client sparked the idea that would become Service Center Pro. Around the same time, Chad met Michaela, a web designer who hated sales. He needed a better website, she needed someone who could sell, and the partnership worked. Today, they have a baby and run the company together from Kuna, Idaho. Their dream was never just to build a profitable business. They wanted to create a real opportunity for stay-at-home moms and others who needed flexibility, meaningful work. But their generosity often backfired, forcing them to learn hard lessons about trust, boundaries, leadership, and their own role in the dynamics they had created. Michaela and Chad, welcome to Hitting the Ceiling.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, good to see you here. So a little bit earlier, we were talking about a virtual company and you invited me to spend a day with you and I would shed some tears. Tell me why that is.
Everything is online virtually for us. Everyone works from home. So we have this online office just so people can feel more of a sense of community. But just like with any other business, when you've got employees and especially predominantly female employees, there's always drama, whether you're in person or not. So I invited you if you wanted to hear crying, because we can pull it out of people if we want to. If it's just the nature of the game.
Sometimes there are tears of joy, but sometimes not.
And sometimes not, most of the time, not even related to us or work. So to clarify on that, we're not just bringing people in to beat them down. We're trying to provide a safe space, but oftentimes that sometimes can be too enabling. So.
Right, right. So tell me a little bit about the business itself. How many people do you have? Revenue size, just to give me sort of a sense of where you've been, where you are, and where you want to go.
So right now, about 8 years in, we're almost 30 employees. And we've been pretty consistently the 24 to 30 employee mark for the last couple of years. And that's the ceiling that we're at. We can't seem to get past that. Revenue-wise, we're at about 1.3 to 1.4-ish. Where we want to go, obviously, like from the beginning days, our vision has always been to build a one-stop shop for small businesses to have everything they need, customer service and, you know, back-end support. And we've kind of spent the last 8 years perfecting one team process and just to prove the concept worked right. And so now our goal is to take that and just scale that bigger. But we just, the questions that we're asking now is, what resources do we need? And are we in our own way? And do we have the capacity, right? So like the same kind of people analyzer, we're looking at the future goals and just, are we going to be able to do this? And so that's where we're at.
So when you think about your 3-year picture and the company that you have now, what are the things holding you back from accomplishing that 3-year picture? So first, what is it, just at a high level, compared to where you are now? What kind of leaders do you need to become? What kind of leadership abilities do you need to master to break through that ceiling?
Where we really want to go 3-year picture-wise would be like having maybe triple size, like at about 90 employees. So we have 3 total different teams. And then for me personally, like my leadership skills, I would have to learn how to manage people better. I'm not good at managing people because I can barely manage myself. But that's, you know, I didn't get into this to manage people. I was always self-employed, you know? So for me, that's my, I tend to have the imposter syndrome a lot, where I'm like, am I really the guy that's supposed to be sitting here in this seat doing these things? Because I don't know what I'm doing half the time. But that's me, I guess. I just have to figure out how to improve my managerial skills. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
My roadblock is me as well. Like you can get the players, right? You can get the pawns and the rooks and you can put them all where they need to be strategically, but you can't force people to become the right people. You have to find the right people. I mean, some people can change, but if they don't have that desire to advance the business, they haven't drank the Kool-Aid, you're not going to get it out of them until they do. And I think that my problem is that I place those expectations on people thinking, well, you're an employee here. You should have this drive and you should have this role perfected. And this is what you should be doing. But they always fail because those are impossible expectations because they're based on what I would do. But it's my company. So, of course, I'm going to do everything to the best of what I would want it to be done. And so in managing people with those types of expectations, in communicating with them, in disciplining them and coaching them, when you have those high expectations, you come in and it starts building resentment when it's not met and they're impossible expectations. So then that resentment builds, you know, poor relationships interoffice. Even with people that I respect, that I really rely on, we fight a lot because I have these expectations. I just need to learn that it's okay not to have expectations. And sometimes even better things can come from that. And I think that they're very limiting because I said, if we have, you know, a supervisor here, 20 people here, and then we have these clients and everything fits into this perfect mold, then we'll be able to replicate it and grow. But that doesn't happen because you can't control life like that. There's always, you know, you'll get up to a certain amount of clients and then, you know, a mass exodus will happen because a franchise left or something, or you just can't control anything. And so having any expectation, I think, is a self-imposed ceiling that we've got. If you think bigger, you'll naturally go bigger. So you always talk about those hairy, audacious goals in EOS. And I truly believe in those because the minute you step outside of this little box that you've got going for yourself and what you think things are going to be, and you open it up, that's when things start happening. And that's when things start flooding in and giving you opportunities to do better because you want to, and you're opening yourself up to that.
A couple things I'd love to dig into, Chad. You mentioned imposter syndrome. And I have to say, from my perspective, I think the world has made it like a negative disease. And at the same time, for me, having worked with, you know, hundreds of entrepreneurs, thousands of entrepreneurs, the visionary or even the leader who doesn't have some element of self-reflection of, uh-oh, I'm not sure I can do this. They're totally lying. They're totally lying. Like if you just look at every leader everywhere, they're just thinking, can I do this? What did I get myself into? You can look all throughout history and people's self, reflections and journals. You can read Meditations by Marcus Aurelius and he's talking to himself like, come on, you can do it.
Yeah. It's self-encouraging. Yeah. Right? It's
encouraging himself.
It's a real thing, man.
It is a real thing.
Half the battle is getting out of my own head, you know, trying to convince myself that, because I'm my worst critic more than anybody else out there. I'm the one that's questioning my abilities more than anything, you know. But we try to do like daily meditation. Well, with a baby, we try to do weekly meditation or, you know, as often as we can. And that helps a lot for me personally. If I can meditate and visualize, like Michaela was saying, putting the energy out there of what we do want and what we can control and focusing on the goals that we, you know, can affect. If you simplify everything, you just say, look, I'm not going to worry about all the other stuff I can't control, and we're just going to focus on these goals and these rocks and these things that we're doing, then it really does help silence a lot of the minutiae and everything else out there. To get out of your own head. But when I don't meditate and when we don't do the little things, the visualizations and the, you know, the affirmations and all the little things that we have to do to keep our positivity up, then that's, we just kind of slide right back into that mentality. So I think myself, going back to your earlier question of what some of the things I need to do, work on, is that in Sandler sales training, it was a 4 to 6 range. They always called it, you know, if you're 4 to 6 in it, where you get good at that 6, 7-ish, you know, out of 10, and you're like, oh, I knew I was good, but I didn't know I was this good. So you start to self-sabotage a little bit and down. You're like, I can slide a little bit. I've done okay. And then you just slide into that 3 to 4 out of 10, and then everybody starts to take notice and make comments, and you're like, oh, I'm slipping a little bit, right? I'm failing in some things. And you say, I knew I was doing bad, but I didn't think I was doing that bad. So that's when you get your butt in gear and you start working again, and, you know, you get into it. But like, that's just the repetitive process and the cycle of it's always, you know, highs and lows. The trend or goal, I guess, would be to eventually in the end up higher than you started in the beginning, but you're always going to be doing that up and down along the way. For me, that's the daily meditation, staying positive, doing all those things to just get out of my own head and get out of my own way, and then let everything just kind of happen as it's supposed to happen. And I found when we do that and you focus on the right things and your positive energy out there, things happen.
Yeah, for sure. And I also find that a lot of people use, I know for myself, that the imposter syndrome, we'll call it, because it's an easier thing to think about and everyone understands it, as fuel for that growth, to put yourself like, okay, well, I'm not feeling like I'm good enough, so therefore I better up my game. So I need to meditate, I need to focus, I need to, it's a drive for positive change, I have found. And most people think of it as a negative thing. I happen to think it's a mostly positive thing to a degree.
I agree. I think people, it could be negative if they view it negative, right? And if they don't stay positive, if they don't use it for a positive reinforcement and motivation and, you know, inspiration, then it could be crippling if you let it if you let it just fester and sit there in your mind and eat at you. It'll cripple you, and you get that analysis paralysis. You just don't accomplish anything. So, but yes, I agree. Like, it can be a very powerful motivator for good.
Yeah. And if you're not committed, it could cause you to run and escape and give up. But if you're committed and you're all in, which as an entrepreneur, business owners, you're kind of committed.
Right.
Employees need paychecks.
You have to make paychecks. You have to, you have a ton of responsibility. And Michaela, there's this video clip going around right now that's quite viral, which is you got to hire divas. And when I first saw it, I'm like, what does that even mean? And they're like, well, this is Google, Eric Schmidt, who did the recording, the former CEO of Google. And he just says, well, you got to hire divas. Steve Jobs was a diva. And he lists out a bunch of people who are quote unquote divas, which means they have extraordinarily high expectations and they're uncompromising. And the reality is when you are standing in their way, they get real, or if you don't meet the expectations, they get a little prickly. And his message was unlock them, because they're the fuel that drives your business forward because their expectations are so high. In fact, don't lower the expectations. Get the people who they can be surrounded with that can actually meet them. And what most people do is they lower their expectations or they eliminate them because they don't like the prickly part. They don't like the part of, oh, they're so annoying. They're ranting all the time.
Yeah. Welcome to our struggle for the last 6 years. Because of that, it's just hard because in the generation that I grew up in, you wanted to just obliterate any obstacles, any expectations of you, any roles that you have, you wanted to do above and beyond, not for any other reason than to accomplish and feel good about yourself. That's just that I just don't understand anything else because that's how I was raised. But I feel like the newer generation of workers, they come in, and I don't want to be disparaging about it, but they have their own expectations. We could call it entitlement or whatever. But when they come in and do the bare minimum, sometimes not even the bare minimum, and then they expect a reward even beyond a paycheck, which in my mind is if you don't do the bare minimum, you don't even get a paycheck. So at that point, you don't have a job. It's just different because they get really touchy, and then they'll take their experience if they don't like the experience. If we're talking about something, for example, let's just say somebody messed something up on a call, pretty minor, but we like to talk to people about it. So we know that they've been communicated with, that they're aware that there's a problem, because if they don't know there's a problem, then they'll keep doing it. So we have to very gently find the right way to say, hey, this happened. Just so you know, the expectation is this. So next time you encounter this event, make sure you take this path instead of this path. But we have tried to say that thousands of different ways, and we're getting pretty good at it with our supervisors. We implemented what's called kind candor. You don't lie to people. You don't set them up for failure by not providing like honest feedback, but you have to do it in a way that's saying, I'm coming from love, and that's why I'm talking to you. And this conversation and all the instruction I'm giving you is because I want you to succeed, not because I want to beat you down. But the way words are used these days and that mentality of the younger generation, that entitlement, it makes it really, really hard to coach people. And it's so much easier, right? It's easier just to be like, well, that's not that big of a deal. We'll just let it slide, because you don't want the confrontation, because then they internalize it. And a lot of our employees, they're empaths, because they're doing a customer service role, but a lot of them are stay-at-home moms. A lot of the reason why we hired them and they stayed on is because they care about the customer service. We're not a typical answering service. We don't have, you know, a bunch of people in India somewhere. We have people at home trained extensively on HVAC and plumbing so that they can provide help to the other stay-at-home moms that call in a panic. And we want them to have that kind of, they want to build that rapport with the customer for our customers, because that just builds their businesses as well. So when you have that focus, you're trying to focus on the empathy, the customer service aspect, but also coaching. It's a really fine line, and people get so touchy in a virtual environment. It's easy just to leave when you don't have to have that physical talk in somebody's office. So if they get pissed off, they just quit. And so we had a lot of that going on while we tried to figure out how to communicate with people on a different generational level, because Chad and I are both the same age. So like we pretty much have that same work ethic. But like Jenny, our director of ops, she's just turning 30. And so she helps give insight to that. She's pretty mature for her age. We're lucky we have her. And it's not just because she's sitting over here watching the baby. I love you, Jenny. She's helped bridge that gap. So finding somebody, you know, 10, 15 years younger than you are to tell you how to talk to these people, I would recommend doing that, putting them in a leadership role. And they can be that diva because they know how to communicate. But if we had an entire group of divas, would be a nightmare. But I do agree with like surrounding yourself with people that you want to be successful with and how you want to be. I guess maybe I have a stigma with the word diva. It sounds like there's an attitude and an ego, bullheadedness. And I would want someone to come in as a leader and ambitious, but also open-minded to new things, as I've had to turn into, because I used to do everything right too, but I didn't.
And divas can be trained somewhat, I think a little too, because whether she admits it or not, Michaela is our diva, and she makes sure that all of the work performance is perfect. And she knows exactly what I'm talking about. Like, we have a quality assurance team, and they're not good enough sometimes, right? Like, she's making sure, not in a bad way, but in a good way. She's very meticulous about how she catches things that nobody else sees, right? That little mistakes or little things. And she's great about, like, trickling that down, you know, the diva mentality, like making sure that everything is just on par, everything's good, but not in a Steve Jobs kind of mean way. More of, again, like the kind candor that we've instituted the last few years has night and day difference on the culture. We used to have, again, like she was saying, we used to just come straight out and be like, hey, you screwed this up and you're in trouble, right? And we lost a lot of employees. They'll had a lot of turnover because of that lately. Like, we haven't had anybody quit for months. And
no, it's the entire 2026.
Totally. Yeah. Had. So this year so far, that's we haven't lost any employees, which is unheard of. Like, we usually have two or three a month, and we're always turning over and going through, but this has been a huge difference for us. And so, like, even going back to earlier, what we were talking about, like our goals for this next 3 years, we really didn't, we had to lower our expectations, like you said before, because we couldn't ever get past that ceiling. We couldn't ever get enough people where we could split the teams and then like double our size. And we would always get really close, and then we'd have three people quit, and we'd be like, dang it, we really needed all three of them to get to this level. And we tell them, like, you know, we're going to add so many more clients. We're going to do this thing. This is the plan. This is the goal. If you can't handle it, like, let us know now, right? We're going to try to do this thing. And it was always just right before we got there, we'd lose clients or we'd lose employees. You know, it was just like, oh, man, we just couldn't ever get there. But now I think we've got a real shot because we've got a different culture. We've really weeded out a lot of the people who were there from before that we brought in out of desperation instead of inspiration, right? So like now we're way more selective of who we hire. We're slow to hire, quick to fire kind of thing, right? But like we're very, very careful of who we bring on as employees as well as clients. They have to meet our core value expectations. They have to meet our checklist of whether or not they're a right fit for us. It wasn't just as if we were good for them. Now it's like, I don't know if we want to bring these guys on because they may not fit our core value if they yell at our agents or if they do whatever. Like, there's a lot of those things. But through that transition process, I guess you could call it, like, that's where I think we were stuck, hitting the ceiling over and over and over again, just couldn't ever get past the teeter-totter of too many clients, too many employees, too many clients, too many employees, because we were always just losing too many of the other. But now I think we've got a good shot. And that's why that 3-year goal is a little bit more in focus for us this now than it was ever before. Because before we were like, how are we ever going to get there? We just didn't know. We were always spinning tires, taking 4 steps forward, 3 steps back. You know, it just was terrible.
To me, it was just a clawing for air. Like when get somewhere and we're like, okay, I fixed something technology wise or whatever, or we fixed an SOP or something, and then things are okay, smooth sailing. We're really feeling content for like a couple of days, and then something else happens, and it just feels like this reactive roller coaster all the time. But
yeah,
I don't know why it has to be that way, and that's why I always wonder, like, are we causing this, and how do we stop it if we are? Because we don't want this. Why is it happening? It doesn't have to happen. And then going back to that kind candor thing with clients, it's just funny. One day we had a client explode on agents publicly in Slack. And we always tell them, you're going to praise in public, but we're going to discipline in private. So if you have an issue, make sure you talk to your supervisor. And he did not do that. And if you just fast forward an hour later, Chad's on the phone acting like a dad to this guy, teaching him about kind candor and how to utilize it and how it's going to help him in his life and with, you know, his employees and his customers and all this stuff. And he made a believer out of this guy who was really just being a dick. And Chad was like, okay, I've got to stop this. And I'm going to try to teach him something. And it actually worked. So like, now he's taking on this dad role of telling everyone about our core values and how to implement them. And this kind candor thing, it's like Chad's brand now. He's really good at it. And so it's just a little side therapy session with clients, teaching them how to do better.
It's a core value everybody should have, I think. And it's like, even when we do our interviews with employees, or when I'm bringing on a new client, I'm doing a right fit meeting, I tell them, like, look, this, our core values, like, we go through all five, and the kind candor is definitely one of our biggest core values. But with a client or with an employee, for example, let's say you walked into Costco or some grocery store, right, and you saw an old friend approaching you you hadn't seen for a long time, right? And as they get closer, you notice they got a huge booger hanging out of their nose. Okay. You're in a situation, yep. Right? Like, all of a sudden you're like, okay, I have a choice to make here. Do I tell them or not? Right now, it's awkward for anybody, no matter who you are, whether you're the person that has the booger hanging out of their nose, or you're the person that is like, I noticed something that I should say something about, but I don't know if I have the guts to say something, right? Like, it's embarrassing. It's awkward. So the kind candor part is, you tell them, but you don't tell them like, ha ha, you got a booger hanging out of your nose. Everybody look at this fool over here who's walking around in public with this thing hanging off his face, right? You don't want to embarrass them, right? So you pull them aside. Hey, look, I love you. I care about you. You got a booger hanging out your nose. Okay. Go take care of it. Come back and let's reset. And then you're not going to be embarrassed anymore for us today. But if you don't say something to them, and then they get home and then look in the mirror, and then they notice it an hour later when they are, you know, at home, they're going to be like, man, I saw Mark at the store and he didn't say anything to me about this booger hanging out of my nose. What a jerk, right? Like, why didn't he tell me? I want somebody to tell me, right? We all want somebody to tell us. We just don't want to hear it. That's the problem with employees. They know what they're messing up. They know when they make mistakes, and they want to be told. People want to be held accountable because we want to improve and do better. We just don't want to hear the accountability. We don't want to have somebody have to tell us that we're messing up, because it's hard to hear. But with the kindness part, that's where you can look. We're going to be candid. We're going to get this elephant out of the way, right? We're just going to call a spade, but now we're going to turn on the kindness so that you feel better at the end. That's all it is, right? So we're just calling it out, but in a way that it feels like we care and support them. So that's how we start it. We say, look, we're going to have a difficult conversation, but I'm telling you this because I want you to succeed, not because I want you to fail. If we wanted you to fail, we'd ignore it. We'd lower our expectations, or we'd raise the expectations and until you'd quit or get fired. You know what I mean? Like, we'd just not deal with you until you went away. Like the cow that's sick of the herd, and everybody just kind of ostracizes that cow out because they don't want the wolves coming into the rest of the herd. They just want that cow to disappear, right? Get out of here. Go away. That's normal culture for regular businesses and corporate America. You know, if somebody's failing and they're not doing well, everybody else just kind of ignores them. Just let them go, right? Until they quit. And then somebody else's problem. Well, when they land in our, you know, at Service Center Pro, like when they land here, that's our problem. And we're here to fix people. We're here to help people, serve people. Why not do that with everybody? Employees, clients, anybody, right?
Especially if there's a baseline of trust.
Yeah.
You can't have those discussions if people don't trust your intentions with it, mm-hmm. no matter what. And so if somebody is receiving feedback poorly, it's either the way it's being delivered, it's threatening, or maybe the person perceives that you are not somebody that they are safe with. You're not interested in keeping their job and making them do better at their job. You're interested in getting them in trouble. If they feel like you are interested in growing them and supporting them, they're going to take that feedback so much more easily. We also previously called it a compliment sandwich, but I could not grasp that concept. So that's why we went with kind candor. And when we talk about it, we say giving it as well as receiving it. You have to change your perception when you receive it that this person is doing something out of good intentions.
When supervisors are meeting with an employee, for example, and holding them accountable and delivering kind candor, at the end of their little meeting and session, the supervisors ask the employees, how did I do in my kind candor? And were you offended, et cetera? Like they really want to make sure that they're leaving that meeting feeling okay. Hurt, but okay. You know what I mean? Like stings a little bit, but at the same time, we don't want them to feel like they hate their job, they hate their boss, or any of that. We want them to leave going, man, these guys really care. And I'm going to do better because I care about them too. Right? Like it's that trust. And that's the whole goal behind. We still have to hold people accountable. We just had to figure out a way to do it where they wouldn't quit right away afterwards.
I mean, ideally, right? Ideally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Chad, you said, hey, I really need to become a great manager. And that kind of took me to the visionary integrator dynamic that the two of you clearly have, at least to me. But for our listener, who's the visionary? Who's the integrator? And how's it work?
I'm the visionary by like a mile. Like I can't do anything work-wise. B through Y, that's not me. And when we introduce ourselves to people, I'm like, I am the A and the Z. That's all I'm good for. I can be here and I can see where we want to go 3 to 10 years from now or whatever. But when you ask me how we're going to get there, I say, here, meet my B through Y. It's Michaela. She's the integrator. I think she scored like 99 point something, I don't know, on the integrator score thing. She's like really high integrator and really high visionary too. But I'm not so high on the integrator scale, so I just have to be the visionary because I'm no good for anything else.
And because I guess I'm a diva, it fits me to be an integrator.
In a good way, I said.
Yeah, yep, it fits me to be more of an integrator than a visionary, just because I can have grand ideas and I can brainstorm and pie in the sky with the rest of them, but I do get overwhelmed when I can't put my feet on the ground running and start knocking the to-dos off. So when he says something, you know, I think we should do this, and then I'm already in my head thinking, okay, how do I start doing this? What are the steps to do it? And eventually I'll figure out that he's probably wrong and we shouldn't do it. So at least I do it in my head first. And we've gotten pretty good. Like in the beginning, I would just run with everything. And now I think he's starting to trust the process a little more to when I say, you know, you went to this networking group and these guys got you really excited about this product that we don't need. And no, we're not doing it. We have to do this all the time. And I sometimes miss, because we've gotten into like year-long implementations with third-party companies that we're going to bring in to like replace our phones or something, only to realize that what Chad was sold is not the solution that we need. So yeah. I'm still a little rusty, but we're getting good at filtering out the visionary chaos so that we can be productive.
Yeah, I'm very, very ADD and all that. So like, yeah, I have between 1 and 300 million ideas a day. And she's very good at just saying, nope, 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 yep, nope, nope. You know, just like going through them. We're definitely the perfect yin and yang.
And then when I do say yep, he pretty much just drops it and runs. Yeah. And so I have to pick it up and make sure it actually happens because
he's on with the next thing.
Yep. And he's even, I mean, we're right next to each other. So he's hearing me frustrated about it all day. And he's just like, well, I don't really know how you feel about that, but
right. Well, if I step in to help, I'm going to break it. So, like, the best thing I can do is come up with the idea and then leave them to it without.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yep. I'm going to screw it up.
Just get out of the way. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, as a VI duo and running your company on EOS, do you do same page meetings? You're obviously married, so maybe same page meetings are, you know, every day, but. Do you have structured same page meetings where you go through and build issues list? Yeah,
we do. So we have our L10 just with the leadership team. It's just me, Chad, and then our director of ops. So we kind of let that become our VI meeting. Gotcha. Just because we talk about anything in front of her anyway. So there's like nothing that
We want her to be on the same page as us too. But
yeah,
being married is different. That does help because we work from home as well. So we're literally 3 feet away from each other, almost 24/7.
Right.
So whenever she has a thought, I get to hear it. I assure you. She doesn't wait till Mondays. She lets
me right
away.
Well, your perception of this seems a little different, though, because from what I'm perceiving, what you're saying that we have a lot of communication throughout the day because we work together, but I don't.
I hear a lot of communication.
Okay. Yeah.
He's a fly on the wall. Because
there are days where I have to have a list to say, okay, I need to check in with Chad on this, even though he's right behind me, but maybe he's in a meeting or something. Or sometimes I think he intentionally leaves because he doesn't want to deal with me. That's kind of a detriment that we're in the same room together. Because if I see something that's wrong and it needs to be fixed, I'm going to get on him until it gets fixed. And he's not the person that's going to jump on it immediately if it's not like exciting for him. So
yeah,
that's the ADD. I like the shiniest stuff. It takes
more fun.
It's more interesting. I can't help it. I get a distraction, especially with an 8-month-old running around the house. I get distracted really easily.
I do feel like we need to have maybe not a weekly L10, but it's something. Even if we did like our clarity breaks with each other through brainstorming sessions or whatnot, I think that we do need that because I don't think we're on the same page with a lot of stuff. And a lot of times it's last minute, like, hey, Chad, answer this text really quick because I need an answer right now about a client or an SOP or something. Mm-hmm. So we have different perceptions of that.
Yeah. Well, it definitely needs to be improved, but yeah, we don't have a sit-down meeting like we should.
I think that Chad's kind of adopted L10s as I work on my to-do list during these. So I think that if we could kind of rein that in, or I guess as the integrator, I should say, no, Chad, focus, stop doing your to-dos. You're supposed to do that before the meeting. But then I also feel like that's the meeting that's going to get him to do that stuff because I'm sitting there telling him to do it. So I don't even think that should be technically a same page meeting. Is it my job to babysit your to-dos, I guess, as an integrator, I guess.
A little bit, but not so meticulously. You know, from one visionary to another, Chad, this is how this goes. I feel totally complete with anything that is on the list and on my mind prior to the level 10 meeting with Kelly. And I do get to-dos, although rarely, but when I do, I have to admit that half the time they are done before the level 10 meeting ends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I just got to do it all right away. And if I don't do it right away, chances of it getting done in the next 7 days, every minute goes down. Like the probability of me getting a to-do done. Like I'm not I have a high level of responsibility to the team. And so I will get it done. And even if I have to skid in sideways, but I've just learned over time, just get that thing done now. And then that way I don't have to think about it because I just won't remember until like 5 minutes before the level 10 or maybe during the check-in.
Yeah, while you're getting shamed. Whenever you have to go to the to-do list, I'm like, oh, I know the to-dos
are coming.
Here's a page of Chad's to-dos that are all red for 3 months.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of those to-dos take more than 5 minutes to get done. And there's a lot of distractions that come along and they're just like, hey, you got a minute? Or, hey, can you help me fix this? Or, hey, can you do this? And if I put anything down for 5 seconds, I'll never pick it back up again.
No. And that's a good self-awareness for delegation. You know, when we talk about the 5 leadership abilities and your ability to break through, and for the two of you sort of acknowledging on the outset that you're kind of the bottleneck for your overall growth, your skill and capability. The way I look at your to-dos from level 10 meetings, if 90% of your to-dos are not getting to done every single week, you could kiss that 10-year target goodbye. You can kiss your three-year picture goodbye because you're just not going to do it. Execution has compound interest to it. Just like a financial, you know, eighth wonder of the world, right? You invest, it has a percentage and it builds up over time. To-dos and rocks are the compound interest of execution. You just get it done. It's boring as all get out. You want to kind of day trade if you can. You want to chase the shiny stuff because it's just more interesting. But the reality is if you just let the compound interest go and do the boring stuff, man, that business just takes off. It hits that inflection point and it just goes like nobody's business, but you got to let the compound interest work. So I try to have uninterrupted compound interest as much and as often as possible. That doesn't involve me.
I agree. And I think one of the things that I could probably do better at is making my to-do list match my rock list, because a lot of my to-dos have nothing to do with my rocks. They're just to-dos. And it's not even my lane. Half the time, I'm just getting stuff done that are like, I have to get done that I don't want to do, like HR reports and stuff, you know, filing court. Like, I don't want to do that crap, but it's got to get done. And
yeah,
I put it off until it's like last minute. And then I have to spend 4 or 5 hours doing it all. And I think it just gets too much. But yeah.
Well, it sounds like you have a good opportunity for some further delegation, because it, in my view, visionaries should not have rocks. And the reason visionaries should not have rocks is because they rarely do them. Like, just lean into it. Just be like, not going to happen. So you should.
But then we've kind of gone that path too, where we're like, okay, we know what Chad's capacity is and we know what Chad really wants to do. So we're going to give him his Chad stuff. And then we're going to do all the work on this side. But then in doing that too, you risk alienating people, isolating them, phasing them out, or making them feel less important. And then when people feel that way, depending on the type of people there, they can either isolate more and just fade away, or they try harder. But I think that because Jenny, our director of ops, and I have such strong personalities that it's more pushing him out a little bit, to the point where he's like, I'm not even going to step up until you ask me, because I don't want to get in your way. And I mean, I love that you guys are doing stuff and I don't want to dissuade you from doing more stuff. But if you need something, say something. And I think that has had its own detriments to the business as well, in terms of like his confidence in selling and all of that. And so now he has his one job, which is basically get the clients, which is what we need to survive, but not a big deal. It's just one job. So go do it, Chad, and be totally disconnected from the entire rest of the company, not know where we're at with anything else, but you need to be the person that drives the sales and leads the success.
Yeah, this is a good point, a good balance there. Really falling into what you love to do and you're great at, and trying to just do those things as it relates to the team, and how you can, every individual is contributing in that way to move the team forward in a big way. And it takes a little while to get to that point where you're really crystal clear on that top left quadrant of love great from the delegate and elevate tool, right? Which is just super, super powerful. Another question I had, Michaela, you're talking about these generational differences between people. And I am 48. So, you know, 80s, 90s kind of childhood and growing up. And I was having a conversation with my hairdresser. And she's like, she was very insightful. She said, hey, I don't think that people your age, my hair's gray, and you know, she's obviously calling me old in a nice way. she's like 25. She's like, imagine for us, for my generation, what it would be like to grow up with 8 hours a day of an iPad, a computer, TV, and you do this mostly online, you know, all the time. Your parents are middle, upper class. You graduate college, and now you're told that you have to work 8 hours a day doing something you have no earthly idea why or what you're even supposed to do because you grew up quite literally doing nothing. She's like, imagine how hard that would be. And that was the first time I was like, oh, got it. Because then she asked me like, well, when's the first time you started working and doing something difficult? I'm like, well, I had a paper route when I was 11. I lied and said I was 12, but I started my paper route when I was 11. And then I enlisted my brother when he turned 11 to join me. And I've never stopped working since then. Like I was always doing something. Mowing lawns, delivering papers, working construction when I turned 16. And I think most of the people my age have grown up pretty much that way. So it was the first time that I heard someone clearly communicate that stark contrast, like, boom, now go work. You've never worked before in your life.
And it's so hard because you have to have two perspectives, basically. You have to understand that perspective. It's so easy to say, oh, you're lazy, you're entitled, you're just useless. But thinking about it from that perspective of, okay, maybe they don't want to be that way. They just don't know any other way. It's relevant because we're sleep training our baby right now, and he doesn't know how to fall asleep without a nipple in his mouth. And whenever it's removed, he wakes up. It's kind of like the same thing in the same context where he just doesn't know that he can fall asleep on his own yet. He's only 8 months old and we've never shown him any. I've always nursed him to sleep. If he knew that, then he could sleep and he wouldn't be so grumpy because I don't think he's crying just, you know, to be a jerk. I think he thinks that he's unsafe or he's panicking about it. And it's the same thing with them too. And so it's hard when you want them to do something, they're not doing it. And you just want it to happen right now. And you're from a different generation where you're like, if somebody was telling me this, I would be jumping up. I wouldn't even be in this situation because I would have figured out how to do it better and done it better and probably done it better than the person telling me to do it. Because that's when I see a goal, that's my goal is to do better than that goal and to leave the room better than when I came into it. Mm-hmm. And it is so hard having that mentality and also trying to understand the perspective of the younger generation. And like I see it, Chad's kids, they're teenagers. They're all day online. And I don't understand it. And I want to blame him. I want to blame their mom. I want to blame society. But like, I think that it's everything. Because even in schools now, Chromebooks are required. So you can't, if you wanted to get them off of it, you couldn't because our entire society is starting to structure around technology and soon AI, which it's a whole other beast. It's very scary. And so we're training them from the get-go to do that. And then we're expecting something different. And it's just like poor management on a high level. Like, we want you to do something, but we're not going to tell you how to do it. But if you can't do it at some point, we're going to reject you for it.
Even going further, like to kids that are in their early 20s and whatnot these days, they don't know how to date. They don't know how to go out and meet people in person at bars and socialize and pick up chicks. You know, they don't know how to do any of that because for teenagers, for example, everything is recorded. So if you go up to a girl at a bar or whatever, like not a teenager, but you know what I'm saying? Like if somebody goes up and approaches somebody and you whiff it, right? If you miss or, you know, you may embarrass yourself, somebody's going to post it online. So they're scared to death to try anything because they're afraid to fail. We weren't afraid to fail because we were forced to go outside, go out and play in the street. That's what my dad always said. Go hit the street, go play in the street, go whatever, go play outside, right? Like we were always figuring stuff out and we didn't have everything shown to us and told to us and safety belts and all this, you know, precautions and things. Like we're trying to keep everybody safe, but at the same time, they're not figuring anything out. They don't build the problem solving skills and the how to create a system out of thin air sort of skills, right? So, but we need people in the workforce who can take direction, have a list of like, here's how to do this, and they execute it perfectly, right? We need people who know how to do things when they're told what to do. But we also, like what we're finding is a very big shortage nowadays of people who can actually figure out what to do on their own.
Yeah.
When they just step into a problem and instead of saying, I don't know what to do here, they go, this is what we're going to do. But when they just put something together, right? They just figure it out. There's very or few worse, of those.
I'm watching people troubleshoot. They run into a problem and they just stop.
They stop.
They don't think there's got to be another way or
reach out for help.
Creative. No, they just stop. Yeah. They just That's the stop. End of the line for them.
And you're like, what are you doing? You're sitting in after call work for 30 minutes. They're like, I don't know what to do. And you're like, you're just sitting there doing nothing. That's they don't know what to do because everything in life is told to them, you know, or given to them or shown or whatever. They just do whatever.
Do you think that it is, because my conversation led me to a lack of training in grit and resilience. Have you ever heard the story of the Biodome? So during
I'm
the
assuming not
Cold
the one
War,
with Pauly Shore.
No, well, it's probably, I don't know. There has been a movie. Similar. So this was during the Cold War, and the United States were very concerned about what would happen if there was some sort of nuclear event in the Cold War with Russia. And so out in the desert somewhere, they built this massive dome. And the whole idea was that we're going to build its own ecosystem. And there's going to be farms and people and an entire self-contained earth, if you will, right? So they could grow crops, they could grow food, there was people there. And they had all these trees that were intended to provide fruit to the scientists and things as they were living in this biodome. But as the trees started to grow, all of them were just laying flat. And none of them actually hardened. They were kind of squishy, and they're just all laying flat on the ground. And it took them forever to figure out. And they, of course, didn't bear fruit, and this was a problem. Can you guess what was missing in the biodome? They forgot one thing.
Oh, what?
Oh no! Everyone, you could breathe in there. There was oxygen in there. It was wind. So there was no wind in the biodome. There was no friction. So the reason trees stand straight is because, right, there was no friction introduced into the biodome. And so the trees, because the trees stand straight because the wind is pushing against them and it hardens them over time and they push against that wind. And that's why they're faced one way or another and why they stand up straight, why they harden and why they bear fruit or how they can bear fruit. And so what happens is when you remove all friction from everyone's life, which we spend most of our time attempting to do, you end up with the biodome. You end up with people or humans who just cannot bear fruit. They can't grow and they can't become strong because they have a complete and utter lack of friction. And when I think about that and think about my kids and yours and the future generations, and then you introduce AI to that where there's even less friction to think, to solve problems. And yet there's some positive to the technology. So you have to kind of think, well, how do we train people in grit and resilience to know what good looks like versus bad and not be intellectually lazy perpetually and take advantage of the 10x, 100x result? And any thoughts from your perspective as you work with your teams? And I have to think in your type of business, AI is going to be a necessary technology that you're leveraging. So how do you get the right people in the right seats plus the AI?
That's the tricky part. And I'll add to like the expression that everybody's using right now as far as like AI won't replace you in your business, but somebody who knows how to use AI will kind of thing. That's what everybody's saying right now. That's a big thing in our industry. So finding the right people. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. It's 1 out of 100. It's just more of like, because our theory is that you don't know a person until 90 days in. Because anybody can fake it for about 90 days or as long as they can. But at 90 days, they're pretty legit. If they're still going at 90 days and you know, haven't changed their personality, behaviors, et cetera, that's usually who they're going to be for a long time. So we have a 90-day training program because we try to weed out those people that are just showing up for the first 2 weeks all, you know, 100%, and then they just fizzle out. There's a lot of those. But... gosh, I also feel like there's a sense of responsibility on our part being a kind of an entry level position, if you will. I mean, it's a little bit more advanced than that, but you know what I mean? Like it's not a doctorate degree level kind of a job. So we attract a lot of those people who haven't had experience having to figure it out, who haven't had, as you say, friction, right? And I feel a sense of obligation to be the employer that trains them on it, because I think a lot of people, younger generation or others, you can learn it. You can learn this, the grit. You can learn this. You just have to I have enough friction for enough time to change, right? And so on our in our training process and in our accountability sessions and all that, we're trying to introduce a lot of that. But yeah, if they don't have it, it's a very big problem, especially with AI making people more soft. I think that's it's going to happen. As it always does in history, soft times create hard, or, you know, create
some hard times for people.
Soft people, and then soft people create hard times, and hard times create soft people. It's a yeah, cycle, it's a right?
Awesome. Well, this is probably a nice stop for the podcast. But before we go, and I'd like to hear from each of you, thinking about organizations who are, you know, maybe they're a chapter or two behind you. They are just getting started. What's the one piece of advice, just one, that you would give them that would help them break through the ceiling?
For me, it would be if you think you've reached the end, you're so close to the beginning. People fail at businesses all the time. I think a lot of it is because they think they've reached that point that they can't break through that ceiling, and they quit and they give up. But if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. The only people that succeed at that are the people that hit that and overcome it. But you can do that. If you're at your worst right now, you should be very excited, because that means it's going to turn if you keep going through with it, and things will get better, and you'll build even more resilience and grit, because you'll be facing this impossible seemingly task and you'll overcome it. So good things are on the horizon. Don't give up. Everyone's there. You're not a failure. We all are there.
My piece of advice, if I could only give one, is as soon as you possibly can, learn how to get out of your own way. Stop holding on to that stuff that you're holding on to that's keeping you held back. Just let it go. Just get rid of it, or delegate it, or integrate it into some, or eliminate it, or whatever. Like, automate it, integrate it, delegate it, or eliminate it. Just get out of your way. You're going to grow so much faster if you just hand it off.
Well, thank you both, and have a great day. All right, what a fun conversation with Chad and Michela. Let's go into hitting the ceiling and the five leadership abilities. So starting with simplify. So Chad and Michela are trying to move from reactive complexity to a clear, more focused business model. And Chad says they spent 8 years perfecting one team process, and now they want to scale that into a larger version of the company. Chad gives the clearest simplify moment when he talked about that he has to stop worrying about what he can't control and focus on the goals and the rocks and the things that they're doing. And that's the EOS idea of reducing the noise so the team can execute on what really matters. Michela's struggle is also a simplifying issue. She recognizes that trying to force every employee, client, and situation into the perfect mold has really become a self-imposed ceiling. And her growth edge is learning to simplify expectations without lowering standards. Their current ceiling comes from too many moving variables: client churn, employee churn, training issues, culture issues, and leadership misalignment. The simplifying move here is to really just clarify what truly drives growth, stop treating every issue as equally urgent, prioritize, and then move forward. So there's some opportunity here to simplify the business to help them grow and scale into the future, break through that ceiling. Next is delegate. So Chad is a classic visionary who's still carrying work that doesn't really fit his strengths. He admits that many of his to-dos are not even in his lane, including HR reports, administrative work that he avoids until the absolute last minute, which I totally get. He really, if he can further delegate all of that, and especially because visionaries rarely complete rocks, when the work doesn't match their natural strengths, they kind of avoid it. Michela adds nuance to this, and when she and Jenny take too much off of Chad's plate, Chad feels a little bit pushed out or disconnected from the company. So the issue is not simply delegate everything, it's to delegate and elevate according to your God-given talents and your zone of genius. Make sure that you're in that love great quadrant. And so you got to be able to delegate and at the same time allow Chad to remain connected to the parts of the business where his visionary energy matters most. And Chad's final advice really captures his ability best. Just get out of your own way. Either automate it, integrate it, delegate it, or eliminate it. And to me, the strongest takeaway here is that Chad should really elevate into vision, to sales and client relationships, culture, in the future direction, while Michela and the operations team own implementations, systems, and follow through. Next is the ability to predict. The company is at a predictable growth ceiling, 24 to 30 employees, 1.3, 1.4 million revenue, and it's just unable to consistently break past that point. And Chad names the pattern directly when he says they just can't seem to get past that. So they're at a ceiling right now, and they're beginning to predict more honestly by asking whether they have the resources, capacity, leadership ability, because they recognize that they are the limitation, they are the bottleneck to reach the next level. And Chad talks about the core questions as, what resources do we need? Are we in our own way? Do we have the capacity? Those are all great questions to be self-reflecting on during your clarity breaks and figuring out a way to get past that. Their old pattern of operating was pretty reactive that we discussed, which is, getting close to growth and losing clients and employees and really falling back. Chad really described that as four steps forward, three steps back. And their newer pattern, once they've broken through that ceiling, is much more predictive. They're more selective about employees and clients, using core values and a right fit filters before bringing people in. And that helps them avoid repeating the same turnover cycle. Our AI discussion was fun. That also fits into predict, I think. And they're aware that technology will affect their industry. But Michela warns against blindly trusting AI to solve the people gap. Their leadership challenge is to predict what AI can and can't do without letting it replace judgment. All right, systemize. Service Center Pro is a business built around process, training, repeatable service. Chad says they've spent years providing the one team process before trying to scale it. Michela repeatedly points to SOPs, technology fixes, call coaching, and training as pieces where the company tries to create consistency. But she also admits the business can feel like a reactive roller coaster at times where one problem is solved and is quickly replaced by another, which is kind of the way it goes. Kind candor. That was one of our discussions and cultural system that they've turned feedback into a repeatable leadership behavior. Tell the truth, do it with care, and make sure the person understands the intent is growth rather than punishment. Their 90-day training process is another systemized component. Chad says they use it because people can fake performance for a while, but by 90 days, they usually reveal who they really are. All right, moving to structure. The company's next ceiling really requires a clear structure around roles, meetings, leadership lanes. Chad talks about that three-year goal as roughly tripling to about 90 employees and three teams. But he admits that he needs to become a better manager to get there, a better leader to get there. If this conversation gave you something to think about, I'd love to keep that going. I write a newsletter called Clarity Break Thoughts, where I share simple ideas, questions, and reminders to help you step back, think clearly, and lead with more intention. You can subscribe at eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts. Again, that's eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts.